Let's return to This Week in America. Here's your host, Rick Bratton.
Welcome back, everybody, coast to coast, This Week in America. Quest Finding Freddy by Thomas Richard Spradlin is the narrative of a case he had in 1976 as a general partner in the Washington, D.C. law firm of Clifford and Warnke. It concerns the search for one of the firm's clients, known to his wife and friends as Freddy, who had suddenly gone missing in Lagos, Nigeria. A devout Jew, Freddy had simply disappeared on Saturday, August 14, 1976, the Jewish Sabbath, while on a business trip to Nigeria. Now, it was against this background that Richard was sent by his law firm on the quest to find Freddy. Thomas Richard Spradlin served as an assistant to U.S. Senator A.S. Mike Maroney of Oklahoma from 1956 through 1963, attended the George Washington University, where he earned his A.A. and B.A. degrees with distinction, Phi Beta Kappa. He also attended the George Washington University Law School, where he earned his J.D. degree with honors. Served in the U.S. Army from 1963 to 67, moved to the rank of captain. Thomas Richard Spradlin, author of Quest, Finding Freddy, is our guest next on This Week in America. Richard, welcome to the program.
Thank you, Rick. It's good to be here.
What an impressive story that you've put together here. It touches so many themes, so many elements of history as we go back in time and see what was unfolding, the diplomacy that was involved behind the scenes. The events, as I mentioned, occurred in 1976. Why now to write this story? Why did you feel now was the time to tell Freddie's story?
A couple of years ago, I was rummaging through my storage locker and came across a banker box containing the file, my personal file on this case. The banker box bore a single title, Freddy. After reviewing the file and giving the consideration to the passage of time, I decided it might be appropriate to write the story as a personal memoir, and that is why I did.
The book is Quest Finding Freddy by Thomas Richard Spradlin. His website is his name, very simple, thomasrichardspradlin.com. Book available at Amazon, all of the usual places. Go to our website, thisweekinamerica.us, and link directly to Richard's website and Amazon. Get information there as well. The book contains a great amount of specificity. We almost feel like we're there with you during this period back in the mid-70s when you're on this journey. Given the passage of time since 1976, how were you able to recall those details? I know you had the notes there, but I'm sure those were just notes. It seemed like the notes really sparked a part of in your brain where you were storing that there. It really came. Did it come alive to you as it did for the reader?
The box I found contained my old daytimer pages on the case, along with Nigerian newspapers, magazines, reference books, copies of my expense accounts with receipts, and daily memoranda I had written each night while working on the case in Nigeria and before and after. It was a simple task after going through all of that to start at the beginning and work through it day by day.
The book is described as a personal memoir. Is it an accurate account of the events described, your events in trying to find Freddy and the political events that were transpiring at that time?
Yes, it is. The only changes I made were to alter the identity of four individuals in order to protect their privacy. The only changes being those four were noted as footnotes in the text of the book.
The book is Quest Finding Freddy. Explain the title, why you selected that.
When my senior partner, Clark M. Clifford, assigned the task to me, the last thing he said to me as I was leaving his office was, good luck on your quest. I had made a note of that, and when I read it in the file, I realized I probably had the title to the book.
Well, yes, it's simple. It's easy to remember. Quest Finding Freddy. It says it all. You were on a quest. The quest was to find Freddy, which unfolds, that story unfolds in Richard's book. Talk about Nigeria. When you were, I don't know if you volunteered or they volunteered you for this mission. Talk about what was going through your mind as you were sent off on this mission.
I had just returned from Nigeria on another case for another client. That other case involved a claim for demurrage payments on a shipload of cement, which had been ordered by the Nigerian government. Since I was the only partner in the firm who had been to Nigeria and had personal contacts there, it seemed reasonable that I would be the one to go in search of our missing client. As to whether I had volunteered or was dragooned, it was a combination.
A little bit of both there. The main storyline is that you're there and you tackle this quest, which is finding Freddy. The mission was different this time. When you're back, you're trying to find someone who disappeared under mysterious circumstances. Did you encounter any difficulties when you arrived in Nigeria on this particular mission?
Yes, I did. quite a bit. My previous trip to the country had been pursuant to a single entry visa. Since time was obviously of the essence regarding the missing client, Freddie, there was not time to secure another visa, and I had to rely on my local counsel with whom I had worked on the demurrage case to seek an emergency visa and have it available for me at the time of my arrival in Lagos. That proved to be a little more difficult than we might have expected or hoped because of tensions following a recent attempted coup d'etat in Nigeria. There were, shall we say, difficulties in obtaining any visa of any kind. As a result, my counsel was not at the airport to meet me when I arrived, and I was arrested, put into confinement, and spent several rather uncomfortable hours there, locked up abroad, as the expression goes. Fortunately, my counsel did arrive finally, and he had a very impressive multiple entry visa, which he had obtained by, shall I say, placing the right amount of money in certain hands.
Understand, yes.
In any event, I was released from confinement and able to proceed to search for the client.
You relied on several embassies, the U.S. embassy, the Swiss embassy, Swedish embassy as well. Talk about that and any help, maybe roadblocks that they put in your path.
I received absolutely no help from the United States embassy and the same from the Swedish embassy, for reasons I'll explain. Freddie was a Swedish national who had lived in the United States for 30 years pursuant to a permanent residence permit. His wife was a U.S. citizen, but for some reason he had never applied for U.S. citizenship, even though he was eligible to do so. The United States Embassy took the position, backed by the State Department, that they owed no duty to him since he was not a U.S. citizen. The Swedish Embassy was similarly uncooperative because they viewed him as a Swedish citizen in name only. He had no connection with the country for the past 30 years, other than to maintain his passport and renew it on occasion. So he was pretty much on his own, and there was one bit of help from a staff member of the Swedish embassy, but nothing official.
As you read the book, Quest Finding Freddy, we understand more about the area. We understand more about the political turmoil that was going on at the time. We understand more about the people as well. I know, Richard, that's one thing that you did and so well is blend in with the people and understand the people, and you make them come to life there. How important was that relationship that you had with the people, the everyday people you came in contact with?
It was very helpful. It was also fortunate that I had made a previous recent trip to the country. Yes. And had, so to speak, cut my teeth on the problems of dealing with the culture at the time. And I really enjoyed the country. I enjoyed the people with whom I was working. I admired them. And there was just a lot of, I'll just call it nobility in the local people. Given the turmoil in which they were living at the time with the recent coup and the other events that had afflicted sub-Saharan Africa in 1976.
And there were a lot of those. Let's talk about that for a second. In the book, you referred to the international political climate of 1976. There was a lot going on a lot of different levels there, some of it visible, some of it not visible to world leaders. Talk about what was going on, because these were really tumultuous times there, weren't they?
They were. Bear in mind that Freddie disappeared on August 14, 1976. Only a month and a half earlier, the event known as the Israeli raid on Entebbe had occurred, that taking place on June 27, 1976. You'll remember that Israeli Defense Forces conducted that raid to rescue hostages being held by terrorists at the airport in Entebbe, Uganda. As spectacular as that raid had been, it caused extreme embarrassment for Uganda's then president, the infamous Idi Amin.
Yes.
Who was also serving at the time as chairman of the Organization of African Unity, or OAU. As a result, Amin began fomenting anti-Semitic sentiment throughout sub-Saharan Africa and in Nigeria. As previously mentioned, there had been 4 months before Freddie's abduction an attempted military coup that took place on February 13, 1976. And although it was unsuccessful, it nonetheless had resulted in the assassination of Nigeria's then head of state, the esteemed General Murtala Muhammad. His loss was a great loss to the country and to Africa as a whole. In any event, it was a bad time for Jewish businessmen to be operating in sub-Saharan Africa. I wondered why Freddie had chosen to go there at that time, but I later learned that he had told his wife in chaos this opportunity. In any event, that was the background in which he disappeared, and against which I went to try to find him.
With all of this going on, talk about the danger that you were in, what you went through on a daily basis, asking questions that maybe a lot of people didn't want you asking, and they did not want you to find the answers. How much danger were you in?
I don't know that I was in any serious danger after being released from confinement at the airport detention facility, but you had to bear in mind that the Nigerian National Security Organization, the NSO, was everywhere. The New York Times once referred to it contemporaneously as a Gestapo in black. They were always in the background. Everyone was fearful of the NSO, and you had to conduct your daily activities with that in mind. You also had to realize that every telephone call, particularly international calls, were monitored by the NSO and recorded. It was a police state following that coup in February, and you conducted yourself accordingly.
Thomas Richard Spradlin is our guest on the program, author of Quest Finding Freddy. The book is available wherever books are sold. His website is thomasrichardspradlin.com. An amazing story. And a couple minutes left. Let's talk about some of the main characters in the book. Richard, who are some of those? And I know names have been changed here, but who are some of the main characters that we become familiar with as we're reading Quest Finding Freddy?
Well, there are 11 major characters in addition to yours truly, I suppose. Frederick Nachman, who was president of Nachman International Trading Corporation. His wife, Ruth, she was vice president and treasurer of the company and was the one who had frantically called my senior partner, Clark Clifford, to ask for intervention by the firm, since the State Department and the Swedish foreign relations officials were unable or unwilling to help. Clark Clifford, of course, my senior partner, the former Secretary of Defense under President Johnson. Peter Johnson, my local counsel, his assistant, Aisha Danjuma, and the daughter of a Hausa chief, was his administrative assistant, as I said. His bodyguard and driver and man for all seasons, Bosede Ademola, was instrumental in the search. My driver, Chima Onua Anibo, he had been a soldier in the Biafran army during the Civil War, 1967 to 70, sometimes known as the War Against Biafra. A young lady, Nwanda Kanu, was an Igbo from Port Harcourt who had been kidnapped and drafted into sexual slavery in Lagos when she arrived there as a young woman earlier in 1976. She had happened to have witnessed Freddie's abduction, we found. And a side story, we were able to liberate her from her slavery.
Ah, interesting.
And her two captors paid a dear price. Fred Okoye, a barrister, was instrumental in the matter. He was counsel to the general heading the National Security Organization. A young receptionist at the Swedish embassy provided some confidential information. And then finally, an anonymous, unnamed colonel in the National Security Organization was also instrumental in the search.
It's a fascinating story. It has all the elements and themes that make this such an interesting read. The book is Quest Finding Freddy by Thomas Richard Spradlin. His website, thomasrichardspradlin.com. Let's talk a little bit about a sequel. I understand that you're continuing the story. Tell me what you can about that.
I am now writing a sequel to this book. It is about the Liberian First Civil War. The reason I became involved in 1992 in that conflict was that I had returned to Nigeria after retiring from the Washington practice of law. I had contacts in Nigeria and West Africa on other cases. The First Liberian Civil War was something that took place from 1989 to 97. It was a horrible, horrible conflict in a little nation with only 2 million people at the beginning of the war. The former History International channel, now Viceland Television, described this conflict as follows, if I may read.
Yes.
This is like civil war on steroids, a post-apocalyptic Armageddon with child soldiers smoking heroin, cross-dressing cannibals, and systematic rape. It is total hell on earth. I was in Liberia as executive director of Nigerian American Associates, a trading corporation, working with the Nigerian commander of ECOMOG forces, a military organization sent to try to maintain a peace or establish peace. It didn't work out very well, but I decided that I would write that story as a sequel to Quest Finding Freddy. The tie being my mentor in Nigeria when I went back was that same unnamed colonel in the National Security Organization who was by that time a full general in the Nigerian army, and he became my mentor.
Interesting. And sponsor. I'm looking forward to that. Any idea when that book might be ready for publication?
I think maybe about this time next year.
Okay, well, I will look forward to that. You're a great storyteller and such a fascinating background. The people that you've met, I hope you're working on an autobiography because you've got such a fascinating career. You mentioned Clark Clifford that you were working with. Before we go, if somebody says, I thought I heard him say he worked with Senator Monroney, and that name rings a bell, the Monroney sticker, I mean, his legacy lives on, doesn't it? When we go to buy a car, we've got the fruits of his labor on the windshield of the car that tells us all as consumers what's a fair price for the car we're about to buy.
You're very well informed, and also the senator was sponsor of the Monroney-LaFollette Congressional Reorganization Act, which reorganized Congress essentially as it now exists. He also was chairman of the Senate Aviation Subcommittee, and a lot of the airports today that we use every time we travel are there because of what he did. He received the Wright Memorial Award for his work in aviation.
You know, it's amazing. Called Mr. Aviation, responsible in part with the Federal Aviation Administration. So you worked for someone who had a real impact on our lives and continues long after he's left office. I'm going to take just 30 seconds here at the end. Do you recognize Congress today from the time you were in it?
Not at all. Not at all. At that time, the slogan was, politics stops at the water's edge. And there was general cooperation between the two parties.
Yes.
Everett McKinley Dirksen was minority leader, and Lyndon Johnson was majority leader. They liked each other. There's a funny story, if we have time.
Yes, please do.
Very quick. Back in the early 1960s, Lyndon Johnson got a telephone in his limousine. Well, of course, Senator Dirksen wanted one too, so he got one as well. And he called Lyndon as they were going to their residence for the night after the Senate had adjourned. And Dirksen said to Johnson, I just wanted you to know, Lyndon, that I've got my phone now. And the story is that Johnson said, that's great, Ev. Can you hold on? My other phone is ringing.
Love that story. We need to do a show just to talk about politics. I'm so old I can remember that well, when people got along in Washington and compromised and got things done, and the country was much better for it. But the book is the reason for this conversation, and it's really been a pleasure having Thomas Richard Spradlin with us on the program. The book is Quest, Finding Freddie. His website, very simple, is thomasrichardspradlin.com. Richard, a pleasure having you on the program. Hopefully we can do this again. So many stories. Thank you for being with us on the program and sharing this story, Quest, Finding Freddie.
Thank you, Rick. I appreciate your time.
It has been our pleasure. The book, Quest, Finding Freddie, you'll find it wherever books are sold. Thomas Richard Spradlin, the author, his website under that name, thomasrichardspradlin.com. Information on our website, thisweekinamerica.us. And I thank King Pages Press for being the author's marketing consultant and arranging our interview today. We are back on This Week in America right after these messages.
You're listening to This Week in America with Rick Bratton. More after this.